I'm Carol Hills with The World. They're like Snow White. They just fall away from the world. That's how one doctor in Sweden describes the cases of hundreds of children there over the past several years. We're talking about a specific group of kids. They are the children of asylum seekers, mostly between 8 and 15 years old. They suddenly fall unconscious after they're told that the family's asylum application has been rejected. And here's where it gets bizarre. The kids slowly return back to normal in cases where the asylum request is approved. You might be thinking, come on, that can't be real. But Swedish doctors have even given this a name, resignation syndrome. And they started noticing a pattern long before the current European migrant crisis. Rachel Aviv has written about it for The New Yorker.
It was in the early 2000s, and there are various theories about why it emerged at that point. I think the most dominant one was that Sweden at that time had started to limit the number of asylum seekers who could come to the country. And people who were not fleeing countries at war were generally denied asylum. And it was the families that had been denied asylum, it was those children that ended up developing these symptoms. So it began in the 2000s and sort of it really has continued for the last 16 years.
You follow the case of Gorgi. He's a Russian refugee who came to Sweden with his family. Tell us about him. What happened in his case?
One of the reasons I decided to write about him in particular was because he was just this very kind of loquacious, lovely, outgoing boy who considered himself Swedish and was very assimilated, and his teachers loved him. He'd been there for 8 years. And when he learned that his family was going to be deported, at first he went upstairs to his room and he refused to talk to his parents. At that point, it looked like he was just very angry and didn't want to participate in life. But within a few days, he had completely stopped speaking. Eventually, he stopped moving, and I think it was about a week later that he had the feeding tube inserted into his nose. And at that point, the doctor said there was no reaction when they inserted the feeding tube.
And what happened to him? How did it get resolved?
So he remained in that state. It began in December of 2015. And he sort of sunk deeper into the condition to the point where a doctor observed that he seemed to be barely alive. He had started to drool. By May 2016, his family was granted a residency permit. And the family sort of ran up to him and said, you know, we've been granted residency. We can stay. We can stay. And for a few weeks, he didn't seem to acknowledge that anything had changed. And then gradually opened his eyes. After a few more weeks, he started to speak. And by the time that I met him in November 2016, I would not have known that he'd been sick. He said that he was still sort of physically exhausted, but otherwise I'm not sure I would have been able to tell.
Now, listening to this, you think, well, how can this be an actual physical syndrome that's mm-hmm. peculiar to Sweden? I mean, how has that understanding of this come about?
Yeah, and I as I talk about this right now, I feel like it sounds surreal and not believable, and I'm aware of that and felt that a little bit as I was reading about it. But when I met the children, it's just not a syndrome that can be faked. There was something so profound about the state that they were in, and just to watch the way that they reacted to people or didn't react to people. It did seem as if they were in a deep coma. But why does it happen in Sweden? Was that the original question you'd asked?
Well, how have they determined or thought that this is something specific to Sweden? How do people know it hasn't happened in other places?
You know, I don't think that they could know. I have been thinking about this since the article came out. And one thought I had was that in Sweden, people who are seeking asylum, if they are children, they're entitled to full health care. So a child who's come there, who's not documented, has the right to see a child psychiatrist. I don't think that that is the case in most other countries. So there is a possibility that there are isolated cases of this behavioral pattern or illness in other places, but it's not coming to the attention of the kind of academic psychiatrists who would write about it.
How have Swedes reacted to this?
It felt very foreign to me, especially in the days following Trump's election and everything that followed, to be thinking about the Swedish reaction to these children. It's just a couple hundred children, and it completely galvanized the political conversation for years. There were debates about whether they should all be granted asylum. There were petitions. There was media coverage saying that this was a national tragedy, that it was equivalent to forced sterilizations. It really captivated the public.
But where does it stand today? Is it still a recognized syndrome that's going on and people are kind of hand-wringing about it, or is there a consensus about what it is?
There's a consensus that this is a real illness, which for a while there was some debate, particularly among sort of right-wing anti-immigration figures. They said that this couldn't be real. So now there is a consensus that it is real. But as far as what causes it, I think most people believe that it is related to that trauma of feeling like you've lost hope and you don't know how your life will continue, and that it's almost this very literal physical manifestation of the kind of psychological despair that children in this situation are experiencing.
Have there been any cases where a family has been turned down for asylum, a child in the family has been exhibiting these symptoms, and the family does not eventually get accepted? Have children come out of this syndrome without having their family's asylum cases been accepted? It sounds a weird question, but that's how
so
I have to ask it.
All I know of are two cases. Most of the children with the illness were granted asylum, but I know of two cases where they weren't and the families were deported. And then psychologists, or in some cases journalists, Swedish journalists, went to the home country where the children were from and tried to see how they were faring. And in those two cases, the children had not recovered. They were still bedbound.
It's just so hard to believe. Has anyone ever died from resignation syndrome?
I don't think so. Not that I know of. There has been a case of a child who was in that state for 4 years, which is very troubling. One concern I had as I was researching this was that maybe there was such an emphasis on the way that this illness was caused by social factors that maybe more attention should have been devoted to treating the problem medically. If it is a kind of catatonia, which many people think it is, then it seemed that there was a possibility of using medication to intervene in that state. But the Swedish doctors that I talked to thought that that was unethical because they couldn't get consent from the patient. And they really believed that this was not an illness that they had the tools to treat. They felt that as doctors, they were sort of paralyzed because this was a social and a structural problem.
Has there ever been any discussion about whether Swedes have given this a name and tried to label it because it's just so un-Swedish?
That's a good point. I would say that giving this a name could, in a way, reinforce it. It becomes a concrete entity. Once it becomes a permissible way of sort of expressing despair, I think there probably is an element of psychological contagion. So in the act of naming the illness, it kind of becomes real and it becomes legitimate, and it's a way to sort of show how we are suffering.
Rachel Aviv writes for The New Yorker. She reported about the so-called resignation syndrome that's occurring to some children of migrants in Sweden. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.